Good morning, Stanton Mennonite. It's been a while since I've been here, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and a very Merry Epiphany. I'm hoping some of you are at least a little familiar with the concept of Epiphany, because that's sort of what is inspiring my message. I've been going through the lectionary this year, reading on the different passages prescribed. Believe it or not, Mark 1, 4-11 was not the passage for this year, it was for 2018. So this sermon brought to you from the future. Enjoy. I was a little bit excited that I was going to talk about baptism when I first realized that, because baptism is one of those core things to the church. It's kind of hard to mess up for me to get up here and tell you something truly off topic or truly off kilter. So it seemed pretty safe. And then I realized I had to lead out with why baptism matters to me and talk about my baptism experience to make it personal. And that's where I'll probably go awry, because I did not have the typical experience. It started out a lot like today. There was snow on the ground. There was ice. I was at Waynesboro, and I was about 13. And I remember the pastor having a call for those who wanted to be baptized. And I looked at my parents, and I said, I want to do it. I want to go in the water. And I don't know if I understood what that meant. I just really wanted to get wet. And it was freezing cold, but the water was so warm. They had this nice baptismal, and the pastor brought me up, or I went up there, and he led me into the waters, and I was baptized, fully immersed. And from that point on, I realized I was a member of the church, and that was really cool, until I went to my first business meeting, and I realized it was really boring. And I wondered if that was the point. Like, was this what baptism's about? Is that you join the church, and you go to these stuffy meetings, and you talk about money, and you just wonder, what on earth is church? What is this about? And so I lived my life in a very religious way, in a very upright way. No one could point to my life and say that I did anything particularly horrid from 13 onwards, but I didn't really take it seriously. The baptism for me was just a mark that I have joined the church, and I can come and take communion, and I can hang out and sing songs and see my friends and then go home. It wasn't until I was in college that it began to mean something else. When I was in college, I was dealing with some pretty heavy depression, was going through some pretty heavy stuff in my life. And in the midst of that, I experienced some pretty severe trauma. And it was in that moment that I felt God reaching out to me, and that I realized my life was meant for something other than the mundane, something other than the ordinary. I like to think that's where my call to ministry began, because out of that pain, I began to realize there was a purpose, there was meaning to what I had gone through, and that baptism should be something more than getting wet and showing up to meetings, and that I should live my life in accordance with that. Thankfully, I was at a Mennonite college, and I learned about something called Anabaptists. And I was like, oh, I can go back. I can start again. And so I decided to be rebaptized in a Mennonite church nearby. And that was this amazing experience. They poured water on my head. They reaffirmed my faith, my commitment to the church, and that I was indeed baptized into the church. I became Anabaptist. Not that I wanted a medal or anything special, but because it was this really meaningful moment for me to begin taking baptism serious. I don't think that was the last baptism in the sense of being reaffirmed into the body of Christ. When I went to the Middle East, when I was in Israel, I bathed in the Dead Sea, and for me that was a sort of baptism and an awakening that the world was bigger than the Shenandoah Valley, than little Waynesboro, than little Stanton, that I was moving beyond the confines of this area to begin reaching the world for Christ. It was a pretty amazing experience. And so baptism for me is a constant process. It's a process of becoming, of unfolding revelation, not unlike Epiphany, the idea that God is slowly revealing God's self to the world, in particular the Gentiles, and moving beyond just Israel to the entire globe, the entire world being called to Christ. But I'm going to back up and talk about Mark 1 for a minute. So you've got these two guys walking toward a river. And it sounds like the beginning of a bad joke, right? Two guys walk into a river. And then one of them is really, really worried. This is John the Baptist. Now, John is well known in the region. He has been a firebrand. He is someone that the Pharisees are not thrilled with, but they see him as kind of a radical, and so he's easily kind of dismissed by the general populace, but enough people are listening to his message that it's beginning to have an impact. And John sits there and says, there's one coming after me who is much holier, much more powerful, one who is going to baptize you in the Spirit, who is going to fill you with the Holy Spirit. And yet, here this guy shows up at his door and says, John, I need you to baptize me. You ever had that moment where you meet your hero, this guy or this lady that you've always looked up to, and then it turns out you can do something for them, or they heard what you had to say and now they want something from you? That's kind of how that feels. You have this moment where you look at him and say, yes, Lord, I'll do it. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I'm not good enough to do that, right? I mean, that's Jesus. I can't go and baptize Jesus. I can't bring him into closer relationship with God than he already is. He's the Son of God. He's the Messiah. I can't do it. With this progressive revelation, we realize a lot of things. We realize there's a lot of things we didn't think we could do that God is going to call us to do. But I want to talk a little bit as we pause and leave them there walking toward the Jordan to talk about what the idea behind this means. I mean, water shows up throughout the Bible, guys. If you read the scriptures, water in one form or another is there. In Genesis 1, God separates the waters, one into the sky and one into the sea. Water is constantly moving through the Old Testament, whether it is in a dangerous, frightful form or in a purifying, wondrous form that makes us clean. I looked at the idea of the Leviathan in Job, or Jonah's encounter with that raging storm and a giant fish, or even the god Dagon of the Philistines as symbols of danger of the sea, of the ocean, and how terrifying it must have been for these people. And then I look at the same rituals using water for purification, using groundwater, using clean water to make themselves pure and righteous and holy before God. The books of the law affirm this. These people had a very mixed view of water. On the one hand, it is this dangerous and terrifying element. On the other hand, it's an element of change and an element that makes us righteous, that makes us holy. For these two men, this is a crucial moment because the waters they're walking into are going to reveal something. They're going to reveal that Jesus is the beloved Son of God. There's going to be a change when Jesus comes up out of that water. And on some level, I like to think John knows that. But John's also wondering, what if I'm wrong? What if this is the moment that I just dunk a guy in water and he comes up and he's not changed and he's not our Messiah and it's all wrong and I've been wrong about everything? And so there is a trepidation inside of him, a part of him that wonders. And I don't think I'm taking too much liberty in thinking that, since by the end of his life, John himself writes to Jesus and says, are you the one? Is it real? Even after seeing what's about to happen, John is going to have his doubts. And that can be a reassuring thing for those of us who are still seeking. Within the contemporary church, water is usually associated with baptism. We don't really have a lot of other rituals or things that we do with water. Thankfully, you leave it out for your preacher. That's kind of cool. But aside from that, we don't do a lot with it. You know, we talk about the juice and the bread for communion. We talk about different things for our rituals and the ways that we go through the church, but we don't really use water for much aside from baptism. And there are so many ways to do baptism. There are those who argue that full immersion is the only true path, that if you don't dunk them all the way in, they're not all the way saved. There are those who think pouring is the right way and that you're just wasting water otherwise. There are even those who talk of sprinkling as if a few drops were enough to sanctify your soul. And they're all right, and none of them are really wrong. But for me personally, I enjoyed immersion baptism. There's something about the imagery of being dunked fully underwater and then fully emerging out of that makes you feel new, that makes you feel clean, makes you feel like you had a bath. But it's a sanctifying bath. I think there's something to that. But I also have appreciated when I've been parts of pouring baptisms and had water rush over me and felt the imagery of sin being washed away by these rushing waters. I've never experienced sprinkling as a baptism, but I would assume that it's a similar sort of feeling of having the water hit you and that shocking moment of in this you are made new, you are baptized. It's a fearful thing. As I said, John was terrified on some level of what he was about to do. On the one hand, he has assumed that this Jesus is the Messiah, that he is going to be the one to baptize the people in the Spirit. And he is terrified that he has been chosen to baptize that man. But he's also a little afraid because what if it doesn't change things? I remember that fear because I'm a product of when it doesn't work. When you go through the baptismal process and some part of you isn't ready for it, you're still young, you still think that the world is going to be easy for you, that things are going to turn out differently. And so you go through a baptism and you come back and you say, well, that was nice and I'm in the church now, but I'm going to go back to what I was doing. When the church doesn't get behind you and hold you accountable to who you can become through that baptism and who you are becoming in Christ, I have seen what that does. And so I want us to look at baptism not as just a ritual that we do in the church and that we just go through all the time, but rather as a sanctifying process. The idea of Epiphany is that God is being made manifest and being revealed to the world. And so baptism is a part of that. Baptism is a way in which we, as congregants, can model ourselves after Jesus, that we can begin to show ourselves as being made new, as being made righteous and holy in God's sight. Jesus' story, obviously, takes a very different turn than our baptism. After he is immersed, Jesus comes up out of the waters, and the Spirit lights on him like a dove and says, "This is my beloved Son, the one in whom I am well pleased." Talk about a charge from God. There is a moment there where God is fully revealing God's plan. This is my Son. I mean, how can they continue to question? How can John have doubts in that moment when the reality is right there in front of him? The Spirit of God is there. God's voice is speaking from the heavens. How many times have we prayed for that? Have we asked God to just come out of the heavens and tell us what to do? And yet we as humans still question, we still wonder what we're doing, if we're doing the right thing, if God's will is really being made revealed in what's happening. We ask those questions after elections. We ask those questions after tragedy, after death, and after loss. We ask those questions at birth and at happy times when children are born and we wonder, will they grow up to be in the church? Will they continue to follow Christ? Will they seek him? Or will they go astray? If I do everything right, will it all come out okay in the end? We ask those questions and we wonder if God will answer us. And oftentimes, God doesn't. But even when God does, I think there's a part of us as humans who still wonder and still question. And it's reassuring to me to know that even when God came out of the heavens in the form of a dove and said, "This is my beloved Son," there was still room for doubt, still room for questions, still room to wonder, is this what God's will is? Is this right? Am I right about this? This Jesus, who is God's beloved Son, will go on to calm raging seas, seas that the Israelites see as places of terror, as places of darkness that hold monsters. This Jesus will calm those seas and walk upon them to be more than a conqueror, to be one who brings peace and love to his people. Jesus continuously shows himself to be changed from this moment forward, from this baptism. This is a Jesus who will show this through his power and through his might by healing the sick, by restoring life to the dead and sight to the blind. This is a Jesus who will still reveal himself through suffering and through pain, through his blood on the cross, and through his victory over death. Going forward into Acts, we begin to see the apostles take on this charge. They continue baptizing. They begin to raise up new believers, begin to spread the church throughout the region by baptizing and raising up leaders in their midst. This ritual of making one clean in the waters and of drawing one into closer, deeper relationship with Christ continues into the year 2017 in Stanton Mennonite, in Stanton, Virginia, in this tiny town. The will of God is still being enacted. This ritual still has meaning to us. So this is the epiphany of Jesus, the Son of God, revealed first by angels, and then in suffering and in death, and then in life and resurrection. This is a life that we offer to the world. This is our charge. This is our charge following this baptism. You are my church in whom I am well pleased. God is calling us to go out into the world and go beyond these walls, to begin spreading his message of love and peace, to begin drawing people closer to God's self. The baptism is not merely a wedding. It is not merely something to throw water on someone and say, "You're good, you're saved, and you're holy." Rather, it is a process. It is a process of sanctification through grace and love. It is something that comes upon us in that moment and continues throughout our lives. I believe that is why the first Anabaptists turned away from infant baptism, because they weren't okay with a one-and-done theology. They wanted to see a lifestyle commitment and a lifestyle change. And I think that is the charge to us as we read this story, that we begin to think about baptism in a different way, that we think of it as a breaking in, as an epiphany moment in this season when we see God's will revealed, that God is entering into relationship with us, that God is inviting others toward God's self, and that we are the divine tools, the divine instruments of God's will. It happens when we invite a friend to church and when we invite a friend over for a barbecue. It happens when we share God's love with someone who needs it, who's crying and weeping. And it happens when we come together with our friends and we celebrate and have a great time. All of these are moments for God to break in and to use us as an instrument of community and unity. Let us continue to do God's work into 2017 and beyond. Let us continue to be an instrument of God's will in this region, in the Shenandoah Valley, in Stanton, Virginia, and beyond. Let us continue to reach beyond our walls and our borders to be more than just a light on the hill, but to be a spreading light that shines out into all the world.